Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
5 o'clock, but before we get to the drive, let's go to the clinch desk. I'm hoping there was some big inning or something crazy. It's a minor league ballpark. Give me Dan Ball. Let's go to the clinch desk. Give me something.
Go, 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 go!
Well, Andy, you're half right. There,
oh!
There was a big inning.
Uh-oh.
It was just another one for the Astros. End of the fourth inning, I should say, out in Sacramento. 7-0. Houston Astros leading the Athletics right now. The starter JT Jin for the Athletics is already out of the game after 6 2/3 and 7 earned runs. Meanwhile, Framber 4 scoreless with 6 strikeouts against the A's.
Did he drink his name before the game? Why'd he give up 7 runs? Good Lord.
Focusing on the plate in the middle between the.
Holy.
Yeah, not great.
Well, you know what Julian Edelman once said?
What's that?
28-3, and he said, going to be a hell of a story.
Oh,
it's
going
to be a hell of a comeback.
Baby.
This is really going to hurt the Astros when they lose this game after leading 7-0. Okay, so, it's 5 o'clock. We'll get to more realistic things in the drive.
This is the drive.
Swings and drives one. High and deep. Into left field. Gone!
The top stories, stats, and quotes from around the sports world for your ride home. WEEI Afternoons.
So before we look ahead to tonight's game, which now will be our chance to get the one that we need for that magic number of one to clinch the playoffs, I didn't wear this jersey for nothing today.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I could wear it again tomorrow if I have to at Fenway Park. I got a shirt underneath, so it won't smell, even if I don't wash it. But I was expecting this to be happy clinch day. I thought maybe the Astros would lose and we could just all be happy here.
It still is.
Hey, it can still be. But last night put us in position for this. And I said it yesterday. I had great faith in Crochet taking the mound last night, even in the light of home runs being a bit of an issue for him lately and some starting to wonder fatigue and innings and late in the year and too much load. But he went out there last night, 8 scoreless innings, 6 strikeouts. You get the win. Could have been a shutout, but our buddy Peyton Tolley came in and threw up a little 100-mile-an-hour BP for a home run.
Yep. Got to find another pitch.
Yeah, he does. That's the offseason. That's his to-do list. You get a little homework, Peyton Tolley, when you go home for the winter. Go find another pitch. But Garrett Crochet was on the mound last night and sounded a little like this.
Strike 3 called on the outside corner. Oh, baby, Crochet with an exclamation point and a signature start for the Red Sox ace.
We still got a lot of games that we intend on playing, and you know that I don't intend on that being my last one. There will be time to be happy about this when the offseason hits, but you know we intend on that being a month away.
Full on, balls on the table.
Oink, oink.
I love it, love it.
So that was Garrett Crochet, and I do hope this is a... this is an afterthought story. If that's his best, most important start as a member of the Red Sox, that means things moving forward over the next week or so didn't go as a lot of us would hope when they hit the postseason. Not if, but when they hit the postseason and he's on the mound in game one. But, Ted, this season from Garrett Crochet, when you think about what he did, like I know the time for this is probably more in the offseason, but I was thinking about it today in the shower, as you guys know I am wont to do. Breslow was not in there with me. It was just me
myself
thinking about Crochet's start. This, he's never been an ace. He's never been what he's been right now, and we forget that. We never include him in the young players that are learning. He is a young player learning to be an ace. This time last year, he was on the worst baseball team in the history of baseball, and they were pitching him like 4 meaningless innings week after week, right on through, down through the end of the season. This year, it's the exact opposite. The Boston Red Sox, who had flailed and failed for four straight years and fallen on their faces in August and September,
yep,
needed Garrett Crochet to be the ace that he had never been in the month of September. And last night was indeed, as Will Fleming said, sort of a signature start. Oh, you think I give up home runs? Oh, Ted Johnson was bringing up on the radio that I had that one game against the Guardians where I gave up four home runs. Let's go out against the Blue Jays. Playoff caliber baseball team, right? Mm-hmm. That's a good baseball. Well, mm-hmm. Playoff caliber. I don't know if they're a good baseball team anymore because they're kind of falling on their faces. And he went out there and he showed everybody what he is and what he can be. I don't think enough can be made of what Garrett Crochet
has done. It's by far his best performance of his career. Like, I know he did, you know, if you look at last year for the White Sox, it was 32 games played, 32 games started. This year, 32 games played, 32 games started. His record this year, 18-5. What was his record last year in the same amount of games? 6-12. What was his ERA last year? 3.58. What is his ERA this year? 2.59. How many innings did he pitch last year after 32 starts and 32 games played? 146 innings pitched. This year, 205 innings pitched. So a lot more work with a better ERA and a much better winning percentage. Like, that's incredible that he's got worked that this much harder than he's ever worked, and his ERA is as low as it is. That's really probably more important than the wins and losses because those factor in the rest of your guys. But he's played the best he's ever played with the most work he's ever had to work with.
And with everything on the line. Dan Ball.
And 64 of those innings come in August and September, to your point, Andy, where he's pitching in leverage games that yep. he hasn't faced yep. in his career, and you get monthly ERAs of 3.19 and 3.55, which aren't, you know, which aren't amazing, but still, considering that it's the first time that we're seeing him do it, pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And aside for a couple, you know, stray fastballs, I sound like Peter Schrager trying to excuse the interceptions. Aside from
the
those,
home runs allowed, whatever.
Yesterday was exactly what I think every Red Sox fan needed to see to calm the nerves. Oh, eight shut against a team that's trying to win the division. That's exactly what I needed to see to calm the nerves.
He didn't have as many strikeouts as you wanted. He only got half of them.
He didn't.
So,
but,
you know.
Yeah, but although, speaking of strikeouts, Dan Ball, could you get me the list of guys in Major League Baseball with more than 250 strikeouts? It's a long list, so I'll give you time to collect
it. It's Garrett Crochet, and that's it.
That's
Garrett
it.
Crochet, leading Major League Baseball in strikeouts.
He's also one of two pitchers to go over 200 innings to this point.
200 innings Ooh. For a guy who'd never done it before. Also, I learned a little tidbit last night listening to Will Fleming and Mike Monaco on WEEI. He has started 32 straight games with a fastball. So if that was
that?
A bet, I wish I had learned it about 16 games ago on FanDuel because I could have made some money. But 32. So it's not always just you got to throw something else because I'm assuming somewhere along the way, scouting reports were like, hey, leadoff hitters, he's going to throw you a fastball in the first pitch of the game.
Earlier in the season, he said that out loud. He said, I start every single game out with a fastball.
That's awesome.
Like that. He said it and just said basically challenge you to hit it. They didn't hit it.
Okay, real quick, can we just talk about his style? Like, I love the leg kick.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see, it's a violent kind of, it's super high.
Yep.
It's.
Who else had a super high kick that he's.
Nolan Ryan.
Yeah.
Nolan Ryan had a high kick, baby. And it just gets you that momentum going forward, all that power. I said this to you earlier in the season. I remember we talked about this. But what would you rather have? Would you rather watch a dominant pitching performance or like a dominant plate performance? Give me the dominant pitcher all day.
So I agree with you because I was actually thinking about that. And one of the, you know what happens in a dominant hitting performance? If a team is hitting, like along the way, you kind of stop paying attention. Ah, they got 8 runs, this game's over. But if a pitcher is at 8 Ks, you want 9. If he's at 9 Ks, you want 10. If he's at 12, you're like, he's going to get 15 Ks today. Speaking of Nolan Ryan, I didn't read this earlier because I didn't totally understand it, but Dan Ball likes to put things in my rundown. These are sort of his version of, you know, SIDs, the Stacey James of the world, and all the colleges have them. They
Dave
put out
Platty
the notes.
Mine at Colorado for 35 years.
They put out, like, Ted Johnson has more tackles in the snow than any member of the history, blah, blah, blah.
I bet you that's probably accurate.
Okay, I was just joking.
Probably accurate, though.
You know who probably had more? Shadur.
I heard he was a better player there.
Oh, man, son of a bitch.
Man, you are picking a fight today.
They did retire his jersey.
Retired his number. Garrett Crochet is one of three pitchers in Major League Baseball history below the age of 30 years old that in his first season with a new team after being traded in the offseason had more than 200 innings pitched, more than 250 strikeouts, and an ERA below 2.75. Those three people are Garrett Crochet, Nolan Ryan, and Steve Carlton.
Oof.
The list is done. I am finished. Wow. That is my list. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk.
That's awesome.
So he's doing not just Red Sox historic things. I saw there was another one, lowest ERA since the turn of the century. It's like Pedro, Beckett. He's in the top five for those single-season ERAs. But he's doing Major League Baseball notable things that were done 50-plus years ago by Nolan Ryan. So in a weird way, I think we're underplaying how good he's been and how important he's been. Kind of rewinds me to earlier in the show when we brought up the MVP. I'm going to say it even more definitively now. It is absolutely Garrett Crochet. It's not even close. He changed this team in a way that this team needed to be changed when he arrived in December, and probably as much so when he got his contract extension and it was like, oh, he's our guy. There's not any uncertainty. Because remember last year at the trade deadline, he wasn't going to be traded unless the team that acquired him gave him an extension. He wasn't going to pitch in the postseason. Like, you eliminated everything, and then he swaggered his way to the mound for opening day, and now he swaggers his way off the mound into the postseason. So I really think this is a little bit. We're not doing porridges that are too hot, too cold, and just right. But this porridge is not hot enough. There should be more coverage on the Garrett Crochet.
It's coming. When the playoff time, he'll get his shine.
If he wins, you got to win. If he goes out there and he gives up three home runs in the first three innings and they lose, then you won't get those roses you're supposed to get. Yes, Dan Ball.
I'm re-asking a question I think we asked 3 weeks or a month ago. More wins in October, Red Sox or Patriots?
Red Sox.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm on the Red Sox now.
Nice.
I think the Red Sox are going to the ALDS. I think they are definitely advancing, and I think they have a puncher's chance here. I like Fitzy brought this up. We're talking about this again, Ted. Vibes. This team's got some vibes rolling into the postseason, and I look around the American League. Do the Blue Jays have vibes?
Nope.
Their manager last night at his press conference said the sky is falling.
Yep.
In a place called the Sky Dome, or
he
used to be called
the Sky. Feels like the sky is falling?
I don't know, but he didn't say it in a way that worked.
Gotcha.
You know how he probably had an idea what he wanted to say there that was going to like rally the troops?
Yeah.
It just kind of acknowledged that his team feels like the sky is falling. That's what it kind of did.
Put words to it, what we're all thinking.
Yeah, and then you look at the Tigers. You look at they're not doing so great. The Yankees are fine, but I don't feel like they're rolling and taking off. The Astros, I mean, until today, were kind of falling apart. Yes, Diz?
It feels like the sky is falling right now, and it's not. I mean, we got 90 wins, and we're in the playoffs, and if the season ended today, like I said, you're winning the AL East. I want that.
Start with the very beginning, though.
Yeah,
what did he say?
Yeah, he did say it.
It feels like the sky is falling right now.
There you go.
He said it feels like the sky is falling.
Yeah.
I know what he meant to do. Don't start with it feels like the sky is falling. You're acknowledging that it feels like the sky is falling. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Red Sox are one of the, I'm not going to say the hottest, the Guardians are obviously hotter, but the Red Sox are feeling pretty good right now. With the guy, you're getting contributions from Yoshida, Narvaez.
I know,
Lowe.
But you know the thing, it's just, but a week ago, none of those guys weren't hitting, right?
I know.
It's just such a hot, this team. I mean, but you get cold in one of the series and then they're out. So, you know, they're not going to stay hot. They don't stay hot. They stay hot for a period of time.
But you know who's not hot?
They go cold.
You know who's not hot? Jaron Duran. What if he gets hot atop the lineup?
He needs to get hot.
Yeah,
please.
I'm a little worried about
that.
Please. You've been ahead of that curve. Jaron Duran has not been great.
I've been so worried about that when my man Romy was hitting out of
your
the
man.
Number. Yeah, that was my guy.
I think
guy,
he's
right?
Everybody's man.
He is. He's everybody's man. No doubt. But that he was the perfect guy for the leadoff. So he definitely Jaron Duran. Let's go, buddy. Because you got the switch from 2 to 3 with Bregman and Trevor Story seems to be working out.
It absolutely worked. Your guy got hot, and
now
Trevor
Duran's
Story
gotta
has
go.
Stayed hot.
Yep,
so
that's right.
Well, at least offensively. Defensively, Trevor Story's
and now your guy
danger.
Who you crapped on. Massa.
Yoshi.
Is knocking
Let's
the
go.
Ball out of it.
You and I can look eye to eye any day, my friend. You are a hell of a DH. And
did I do that?
That's my guy. Speaking of our guy, Tommy Curran.
when he wasn't putting us on hold, he was talking to us about Mike Vrabel and the coaching and sort of what this team is all about. I thought this was really interesting.
Are you happy with the speaking of arc and trajectory, with how things have gone thus far?
I'm happy if I'm a Patriots fan to see a much better football product on the field, but disappointed that Mike has not been able to yet extract from them the pound of flesh for the mistakes they make. And I think he has to be meaner. And I think some of the players have to be meaner to each other. I think they're all very nice to each other and understanding. But somebody's got to say, we got to cut the stuff
out.
He didn't say it. He's fine.
Careful.
He's fine. He's good.
So cut the bleep and be a little meaner to each other. Do you agree? You've been in locker rooms. You've been around leaders, probably some nice guy leaders and probably some a-hole leaders. Do they need a couple more a-holes leading the way?
You know, to some degree, yeah. The heat needs to be turned up. There needs to be, I think, more consequences for bad play. Guys that keep making mistakes keep getting rolled out. And that's not setting the tone for of the culture of accountability that you're trying to establish.
And you know what I think is funny here?
And he makes excuses on penalties a lot. He makes excuses for the fumbles. Hey,
yes, he does.
It takes more than just one guy to fumble the ball. Not really, Mike. No, just one guy.
Okay, so you're not buying that either. We got to protect the guy with the ball
How do I defend? I don't know how to defend that. I don't know how to straight face.
In some ways, I'd get it. I'm sure there are examples
If you block the guy you were supposed to that hit him, maybe then the ball doesn't pop out.
Right. So we haven't really seen these examples of like, oh, a guy got blindsided because one guy missed his block. It's more at the line of scrimmage. I mean, it was a goal line play, and he was going into the goal line, and a hand reached out and hit the ball. So I'm blaming the left guard.
And one of the fumbles that Ramondre had was in the second line.
Yes.
I passed the first line.
And
in the open field.
Are there some examples of plays where, yes, other people could help the ball carrier? Sure. Yeah. Does that fit this situation? I would argue no. Also, if we're going to talk about Vrabel being kind of an a-hole and maybe leading with more of an a-hole mentality, he's been kind of an a-hole in the media at times. He's kind of bullied Phil Perry a couple times and put him. Then he had, I think, Andrew Callahan one Wednesday. We're going to have a problem if you keep asking about the last game on Wednesday. It's time to move on. Like, maybe that approach is what he needs to take with his football team and not make excuses for his football team while bullying the media. But I also think some of it's the players. Who's the a-hole leader on this team?
I couldn't tell you.
Maybe Spillane could be? He seems pretty hard.
No, he is no.
Diggs?
Because he wasn't playing good until last game.
Diggs?
No.
Was Willie McGinnis an a-hole leader?
He was a very tough leader.
Okay, so
a-hole,
tough, however phrase it.
I would put, if you want to classify it as a-hole, I wouldn't say it quite that way, but he was a tough leader.
I wouldn't say it that way if he was within like 50 miles of us right now.
Because his arm almost would reach 50 miles to your chin.
The most intimidating person.
And it's not even close.
I've ever been around.
Yeah.
Like, crazy. But who's the Willie McGinnis for this team? Like, who can be that sort of imposing figure that
Milton Williams? Is that a guy? Is it Christian Barmore? You know,
like, but they seem too nice and happy go lucky.
Where's the personality?
You know who
team?
Would be perfect
I haven't
for
seen,
it?
I haven't seen many personalities in this team in a long time.
If Keon White were better, he'd be the imposing figure. He's the closest thing to an imposing Willie McGinnis type figure. He's just been sort of irrelevant to start the year, and I don't. You've said it. You can't lead if you're not really.
Sometimes it's like Morgan Moses. Is it Will Campbell? You know,
Morgan
offensive
Moses.
Linemen. Offensive linemen are also kind of those. You hear stories about Bruce Armstrong?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an a-hole leader right there. That was scary, scary a-hole right there. That guy.
Wow.
Jeez.
Tell me where he touched you on the doll. You seem like you got bad memories from that.
Dude, he had a taser that he brought to training camp one time. You never heard the taser story?
No, but I'm going to right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, man.
He tased teammates?
He threatened to. Yeah, he liked to zzz around you. And
that might
scare
be
you.
A little too far.
Yeah, maybe.
He might have crossed a line there from
I don't think
A-hole
he ever
to
touched
sociopath.
Anybody with it, but he would carry it around as if to say, don't mess with me, you'll get the tase.
And what year was this under Parcells or Carroll?
This was under Carroll, 1997.
Carroll's like, I'm not telling him to put it away. He'll tase me.
It wasn't under Belichick. It was, I think, when Pete came.
Okay.
He's like, you know what?
All right, we don't need tasers, but I'm with Tom Curran. There might need to be a little bit more biting leadership and guidance on this. It's a young team.
Young Bucks, you might have to kind of...
Or just stronger words in when you're critiquing guys, not letting guys off the hook, which it feels like is happening time and time again. And some people would say, well, we had Scott Pioli on the set with us in the postgame on NBC Sports Boston after the game this past weekend. And he's like, you know, just because he's saying it one way in the media doesn't mean he's saying it something differently behind the scenes, which would contradict anything I've ever learned from coach. Usually the message you get behind the scenes is the same message you get in front of the kid. So,
and it should be.
It should be. There shouldn't be a message the media gets and the fans and different for the players. It should all be the same message.
Consistency and leadership is key. Otherwise, you have mixed messages, and right. The guys are like, wait, which one do I listen right. to? The closed doors or what I read in right. the Boston Globe right. or heard
That
on...
would confuse players.
Absolutely, and you don't want their... You don't want to confuse them. They got enough on their plate. They got enough on their plate.
They're easily confused.
Absolutely. 617-779-7937. We'll get back to your phone calls. We'll also look at tonight's game. The magic number remains one. We were going to do another check-in with the clinch desk, but the clinch desk is now closed for the day. The clinch desk will reopen around 7:07 when the Red Sox take the field against the Blue Jays. Coming up here on WEEI Afternoons, your phone calls and a preview of Bayo Blue Jays.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's our guy, Alex Cora.
And Breslbach.
And we did. We talked to him on Wednesday, and we finished up with, you know, this is the last time during the regular season. And he's like, we'll talk to you next Wednesday, baby. So he's feeling good. And since then, they've played more winning baseball.
Is next Wednesday October?
Yes.
Yes. October 1st.
So, Alex,
see you in October.
October, baby.
You're damn right. And then we're first thing I'm going to ask him, so who's the third catcher on the team? Can we get back to that? That got a little chuckle out of him yesterday, Dan Ball. He enjoyed that little lighthearted fun.
Yes, Andy, you're very funny.
Thank you, Dan Ball. That's what I was looking for. Positive reaffirmation.
You went fishing and you caught your fish.
Let's go to the phone line.
Has anyone asked you about the third catcher come October recently?
No, they haven't.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that was a gen. That was a pretty good one.
I got to talk to Alex.
You were making fun of me. Now you realize he really did laugh.
Alex, don't encourage him, man. Stop laughing
he
at his
has
jokes.
Done a lot of encouraging of me this year. Various yeah. things, the youthful leadership, the yeah. radar guns
I
being
think you're
juiced
his,
up.
You're his favorite. You're his favorite.
Oh, I'm the pet. Oh, I appreciate it, Alex.
Alex, are you at a career crossroads at any point?
No, that's you, Dan Ball. We'll get to that
yeah,
at some
Dan
point.
Dan seems to think so.
You think he's at a career crossroads.
I do, but it's a compliment instead of what you said to Cole Strange.
Yeah, there's probably some truth to that.
It's a promotion, not a
one
demotion.
Is getting promoted, one is getting asked to leave the
Wiped
organization.
Off the face of the yeah. earth, yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phone line, 617-779-7937. Let's go to David in the car. What's up, David?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. So, as always, thank you. So, you know, I kind of agree with Mike Vrabel. I mean, yeah, we're quick to blame the guy carrying the ball. But what happens is when somebody comes from behind you and punches the ball or hits the ball out, you can't see him coming. So the guys protecting you around you have to do their job. And the guys that are punching out the ball, they're doing their job the way it should be done. And that's how the Patriots on 2007, Rodney Harrison was too worried about tackling the player versus playing the ball and knocking the ball loose, which that's what he should have done.
All right. Thanks for the call, David. I just disagree. I mean, there will be examples of what you're talking about. None of Ramondre Stevenson's fumbles are examples. Antonio Gibson's fumble, not an example. Drake May, he just was kind of moving forward and admits he was trying to do something stupid. He was going to pitch the ball. He was trying to he was getting looser with the ball, not tighter with the ball in a hectic situation.
Yeah. I just would say there's, you know how many guys, running backs, in a game get hit from behind and don't fumble the ball? So, right, you know, that's just, there's guys that are going to be unblocked, you know, and not everybody blocks every single guy on every single play. So when the guy hits you from behind and you don't see him, you should still have it secured enough so that it doesn't fumble.
Right. Other than maybe there will be some examples potentially when Drake May drops back and Will Campbell gets toasted on the edge and a guy just runs through Drake May, never sees him, the ball pops out. That's a fumble where you go, Will, I need you to protect him a little bit more.
Right.
Can't let him get hit with the blind side. Football Talk on WEEI is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local game live every Sunday, all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Let's go back to the phone lines to our buddy Ralph in Cranston. Ralph. What's up, Ralph?
Hey, guys. Yeah, you know, you mentioned McGinnis before. Yeah, McGinnis is tough, but I was at a table at a show years ago, and Andre Tippett, to me, is the scariest guy. He makes you look at him like, I don't know, am I calling him the right thing? And Bobby Knight was at this table, too. Oh, my God. It was like tension like you can't believe.
Wow.
But anyway, you know, it's an opinionated show, and it's my opinion. I give Breslow, hands down, the executive of the year. If you look at this now, every move he made, I know he took a lot of heat at the trade deadline, and yeah, probably could have did something more. But you look at the moves that this guy made, and, you know, every one of them, Crochet, Chapman, Nevaez, Bregman, they all turned out so well. He did an amazing job. He should get credit. And, guys, it's my opinion, he's hands down the executive of the year here.
Thanks for the call, Ralph.
I haven't done all the roster construction and analyzing, but I mean, Ralph makes good points. I mean, no? Okay.
So I think Crochet. I have to make an argument here. Crochet, Narvaez. Good. Narvaez,
Chapman.
Good.
Chapman.
Chapman.
Whoa,
whoa, time out. Let's back off Chapman. Chapman, he signed to a contract to be probably a setup guy, long reliever, and they lucked into the fact that Liam Hendricks couldn't be the closer. Chapman took over the closer and ended up having one of the best little luck involved there. Go ahead. Next. Alex Bregman.
Yeah, Alex Bregman.
You know who wanted to sign Alex Bregman?
Yeah, Alex Cora.
My guy, AC. Alex Cora, baby. The Devers trade. Who wanted to trade Devers?
That would be the owner.
John Henry.
Okay.
So a lot of, if you want to say organizationally, they found a way to make the right moves this year, I would agree with that. But I think you have to say there were strong voices from Cora and Henry with Breslow.
People are going to look at the Devers thing is that he didn't get enough back. I mean, he just basically dumped salary. You got nothing back in return for him.
And that's where you can say, did the owner have too much say? Or you know, was that the owner's goal, and therefore they fulfilled the owner's goal more than the baseball team goal? And don't give up on Jordan Hicks.
And I will say this too, Ralph. Sorry, buddy. You know, now that I think about it, we all kind of thought it was a foregone conclusion that Joe Ryan was getting traded here.
How'd that work? I believe the ball was on the 5-yard line, not to go back down that road, but the ball was on the 5-yard line.
A lot of people in the organization that were dropping hints that something big is coming, something big is coming. No.
Steven Matz?
Not big enough.
No. Dustin May?
No, not big enough.
How about May and Matz?
Not big enough. Nope. Not big enough.
Dan Ball, I would like you to chime in because I feel like you have a very strong opinion on the idea that Craig Breslow is the executive of the year.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily agree. I give a lot of credit to him for finding some of the kind of the second tier depth players that have really kind of rounded out this roster over the last 2 years. That's Romy Gonzalez to Carlos Narvaez to Greg Weissert. Like there are plenty of individuals on that make up the depth on this roster. I can't look at that trade deadline and the lack of a significant move for a team that deserved it and give you executive of the year. You nailed it with Crochet. You didn't want Bregman, but you got forced by your owner and your manager to sign him. You, to your point about, I don't know what he wanted to do with Devers, but it was not a well-executed trade. He did fine, and because they're going to make the playoffs, he'll keep his job, and my take about Cora moving upstairs is going to have to wait a year, but I can't give you executive of the year for some moves that I don't really feel like you deserve credit for making.
And
Daniel.
That haunted me during high school.
I also think he learned at the deadline. I think he
learned a lot, I hope.
The Joe Ryan experience will help him in future trade deadlines.
Yep.
Because I think Dombrowski or an aged veteran who'd been around the block would have treated that differently.
Oh, very different.
And may have pivoted sooner and gotten something else. They got caught up at the end, all in on Joe Ryan, and then they didn't get Joe Ryan. It's like, oh my God.
And they thought they did, and so they trusted the other team. It's a whole different deal negotiating and signing guys in the offseason versus at the trade deadline.
Right.
A lot more pressure, and you better be a much more skilled negotiator for those trade deadline moves than you would in the offseason.
Yes, Dan Ball.
I'll bridge the gap with the caller, though. If Breslow is as smart as I think he's believed to be, and if he continues on the trajectory year one to year two that he is, I could see him winning it next year. I just don't think he earned it this year.
Well, if he wins it next year, then Cora's still not going to the front office like you saw.
But that probably means they're a World Series contender. And you know what?
I'll take the loss in exchange for that.
That's true. And then Cora might just collect another World Series ring. And then who knows? Maybe he just retires.
You're going to be right on that take eventually, Dan.
Yeah, you'll be. You've learned well from me. We're always right in the end. Like genius walks alone for a while, but you find the right answer in the end, right?
Yeah. Or even if I'm wrong, I'll try to tell you why you're also wrong. And therefore, I am right.
There you go.
So 87 wins for the Boston Red Sox, the most since 2021. Are they going to get to 90 wins, Ted Johnson?
What do we got, four games left?
Four games, so they'd have to go 3 out of 4, one in Toronto going for the sweep, and then you obviously have the Tigers at Fenway.
They are, and I'm going to tell you why. Oh. Because I predicted 90 wins before the season. So
so we're just going down with the ship either way. Why give up on our own prediction now?
Let's go, baby.
I can also appreciate that.
How those Detroit Tigers playing these days?
Not great. Not great at all.
Finish up with three.
That was one, Dan Ball. We missed one question that I feel like we could have asked about the third base coach for the Detroit Tigers and sort of what this time of year is like. Because I am actually interested in that. Like Alex Cora, Joey Cora, when do we talk? What do we, how do you treat it? Like, oh, we're playing well. You stink. Where's it going? That kind of thing.
Cora doesn't seem to be a guy who worries too much about the circumstances around those kind of like, oh, he's my brother. He just kind of throws that away.
Right.
But I would be curious. Because they've been in the situation before, both of them have.
Right. And they could go to breakfast on Friday. Tomorrow, a.k.a. tomorrow, Andy, they could go to breakfast tomorrow morning and Alex is riding high, headed towards we clinched last night. My ace is ready. I'm going to rest Giolito. And Joey is on a team that is falling like a stone that had a freaking 15-game lead or whatever not too long ago. Well, that's weird.
It is a little weird. But and you know what? I say I'm being overly optimistic getting to 90. Dan, I think I heard you say earlier in the show, like, how are they going to handle once they clinch, hopefully tonight, how do they handle the pitching in those last three games? I mean, they're probably not going to be throwing out their best stuff, so I don't know. I mean, I could see them maybe not getting to 90 wins because of how they pitch and kind of manage the last three games after they've clinched.
Right. I need to answer a texter. Because I did say this, and I need Dan Ball to clarify for me, so I hope you're ready.
Okay.
The 978 said, Hart said over and over, sounds like me, trade all the prospects for Joe Ryan, LOL. I did say that, and I stand by that. My only question is, what were all the prospects? So Peyton Tolley would have been gone, right?
Yep.
The guy who we loved for one game.
Yeah.
Basically.
Right.
We fell in love with one game.
Now I'm not sure he's going to be on the playoff roster.
Connelly Early, would he be part of that package? Was he also gone?
I think it was one or the other.
Okay.
It was David Sandlin. It was, who's the infielder? I can't remember his name. Franklin Arias. That was one of them. There were four.
I'm fine with all of this.
I don't think it was either one of the lefties. And by the way, Genius did not walk alone on that one either. Everybody was saying trade prospects.
Right.
Anything that wasn't named Roman Anthony, people were saying trade for Joe Ryan. And I still think you're right by saying that.
Yeah. And I still would be quite comfortable. And so the Tolley, where you didn't even get the win because Weissert blew the game. But those couple like fun first outings, you could have had Joe Ryan every fifth day throughout the totality of post-trade deadline. I still would be quite comfortable with that deal, trading the prospects for Joe Ryan, and I think they would be already in the playoffs. They would have clinched. We wouldn't be waiting right now. And I think I'd feel better about the trio or whatever of Garrett Crochet, Joe Ryan, and then Bayo Giolito or whatever the hell else.
Yes,
right?
Yes,
so,
yes, of course.
Yes.
Yep.
Texter, you got me. I said they should have gotten Joe Ryan for all the prospects, and I say it again today.
And not to spoil the offseason, but I hope everybody enjoyed the Tolley early Harrison experience because one of those guys is going out the door when they trade for Joe Ryan this offseason.
Correct. And I'm okay with that.
Me too.
And it might be Peyton Tolley, who I think is fun, and he may be a star in Minnesota when he figures some secondary pitches out. But for right now, what you just said, World Series contender next year, and that's with Joe Ryan.
Well, and everybody inside the organization, I feel like, is dropping hints that that's going to be their main priority.
Oh, absolutely.
Getting Joe Ryan.
Absolutely.
This offseason.
All right, speaking of priorities, the new owner, Bill Chisholm, of the Boston Celtics, spoke today, and he told us a little bit about his priorities. But we also have evidence they may contradict his words. We'll talk about that next in Odds and Ends here on WEEI Afternoons.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's an interesting rejoin for a guy who just got here, Bill Chisholm, new owner of the Boston Celtics, Mr. Whatever It Takes. And that'll be the subject of our odds and ends today, brought to you by Cars for Kids, your trusted charity for car donations. And I really hope whatever's playing behind me is clean. Also accepts donations of boats, RVs, motorcycles, and real estate. Call today, 877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. That's Cars with a K. So Bill Chisholm says, whatever it takes, you need me to sweep the floors or go to the games, press conferences every day. I don't know. How about keep Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis and keep the best team together? I don't need any of that other fancy stuff. It's very simple. So, and I'm obviously joking a little bit here, but to say whatever it takes after you kind of just reset the roster,
yeah,
got under the second apron is a little disingenuous, I guess, or just words. I have no problem because he seems like I'm always more interested in these types of owners. These I was a fan. I loved the team forever because I do think more often than not, not all of them, but more often than not, they are more like we would treat it. Go get a player, try to win, overextend yourself, whatever. Do you think that'll be the case with Bill Chisholm?
I think so.
I do too.
Yeah, I get the feeling he's like a Mark Cuban, you know, he's going to take care of the players. He's going to do it the right way. I know let's face it. If I'm the owner of a team, I won't want to pay that luxury tax. I'm just being honest. I don't know. On a season, which probably isn't going to, probably to me, it was a natural reset, but I can see your point too, especially, when you're saying you'll do whatever it takes. But I get the feeling that this guy is going to be a good owner. Just my initial impressions. That he's a cool guy. He seems grounded. He doesn't seem like a whack job, like some of them. And he feels to me like he'll be a good steward of this team.
So Dan Ball, my current example, Mark Cuban's a good one. He was sort of the original fan owner. Everything that the team needs, we're going to have better planes, better this to give you no excuses. Yeah. You're going to win.
Players love playing in Dallas because of that.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. My more recent or modern example is Steve Cohen with the Mets. And I use the story that Steve Cohen, who has spent a lot of money on the Mets, but a few years ago, somebody said, and I don't know if it was a fan or a radio person, said, they should put a roof on Citi Field. It would give us an advantage. And you know what Steve Cohen did? Called an architect and said, how much would it cost to put a roof on Citi Field? Now, he found out the number and was like, yeah, we're not putting on, but like that his instinct was to actually call and see if it could be done. That's the kind of owner I want. I know you can't always do everything, sign everybody, pay everybody. Do you think Bill Chisholm will be that, Dan Ball?
Yeah, I really do. I'd like to believe that because I don't think we have any concrete evidence that he isn't. I think you identified a season this year without Jason Tatum where it was advantageous for you to break it down a little bit. But Brad Stevens also spoke and kind of gave the illusion that, well, now we don't have anything standing in our way. We don't have any tax issues. We can build this thing back up once Tatum is healthy. So I believe he's going to do that, and I really do hold on to hope that he's going to use his fandom to power. I really will do whatever it takes to win.
And I don't want to, one part of me says they're not as talented around my guy JB for this year. Mm-hmm. The other part of me says Porzingis was always hurt and Drew Holiday was looking old. So are they talented? Were you a better team theoretically with them? Sure. But if you can reset it, get younger, find a new version of younger talent to piece around Brown and Tatum, and this is the year, and we're probably not actually going to see Tatum, despite the fact that he's taking fancy drugs and whatever and promoting those legal drugs, non-opioid painkillers. I didn't want to insinuate anything there. Christian Arkin.
What's up, Christian?
Hi.
Like that shirt,
steroid
man.
Era
That's an awesome
Arkin.
Shirt.
Thank you. Fitzy, awesome. Fitzy said something that bothered me today, real quick.
Oh, today?
Yes.
Classic.
He said, you were talking about kits because about the Patriots and the stadium and all that. You were talking about kits, and he said, oh, my favorite kit was from Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place. He was thinking of Kat Dennings from Two Broke Girls, so he had the wrong show and the wrong name. And I bet he thought no one noticed, but you know what, Fitzy? I noticed. And where is he, by the way?
Where is Fitzy?
I don't know.
We wonder that every day.
I wanted to yell right in the second. I'm like his robot face, his computer face. I can't even yell at that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, I heard that, Fitzy. I heard that. You were wrong on two counts.
That proves Christian Arkin could get angry about anything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was at home with George. He was just having fun.
It was the first segment of the show.
And you never know what's going to get his ire.
I love it.
But stick around for
the nervous energy tonight.
Christian Arkin show. Some nervous energy. Clinch day. Happy clinch day. Red Sox need a win. And then he'll have the Mass Mutual pregame show leading into Red Sox Blue Jays in Toronto. We'll be at Fenway Park tomorrow. We'll talk to Josh McDaniels in the 2 o'clock hour. Mike Giardi in the 3 o'clock hour, and Brad Foe in the...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.